See, here's the imprimatur. Says full approval of the church. How come then that if this is a Bible that's recognized by your church, it says the Seventh Day of the Sabbath, just like the Protestant Bible does. Well, can you beat that? Did you ever hear such damnable heresy in all your life? Now, I'll tell you one thing more, that this Bible is a faulty translation. This is the Douay version now he's talking about. It's a faulty translation. You can't rely on it. It's faulty. Well, now, if it's a faulty translation, if you can't rely on it, he just got through saying the Bible was a dangerous book, then why over here in the preface do you promise 300 days out of purgatory for everybody to read it 15 minutes? Here it is right here. He looks at it. He says, to be very frank with you, that's to meet the constant charge of you Protestants that we withhold the Bible from our people. Actually, the Bible is a dangerous book. It leads to heresy. I said it most certainly does. Anybody that read it would certainly come out of your church. And we had this study in the parish one time, and we convinced a woman that she ought to come out, but she wanted us to meet with the priest, too. So we met with the priest, too. And one of the men that went in with me was a Catholic, and when we finished the study, the priest came over. Mayhood, don't you dare ever come into this parish with this heresy again. And Mayhood, Dr. Mayhood, who had been reared a Catholic, came out to the car shaking from head to foot, and he was scared for his life. He said, I've had it. If I ever go back to that parish again to win any of his members, I'll be killed. I know, because I taught school in a Catholic school in Canada for many years. I've had my warning, and I'm staying out. And he never went back again. You couldn't drag him back, because he'd had his warning. He didn't shake his fist into my face, because I was a Protestant. But we met him entirely with Catholic books. He said the church has never persecuted anybody. That's only your heretical Protestant teaching that the Catholic Church is public, has persecuted anyway. So I got a Catholic book, and I said, it says right here that the church is persecuted. Nobody but a tyro will deny. A tyro is a rank novice, one who knows nothing about the subject. And there it is, right in one of their own fully approved books, that nobody but a tyro would ever deny that the church is persecuted. And I said, what are you going to do with that statement? He said, we're not going to have any more of this damnable heresy ever come back to this parish again. This interview is over today. You folks may go. And so we left. And we asked the woman after that what she thought of the study, what she decided to do about the Sabbath. She said, I'm convinced that you folks are teaching the truth. But she said, every time I meet that priest, now his beady little eyes bore into me. And she says, I just start trembling from head to foot. And she said, I'm a doctor here, and all my parishioners are Catholics. And if I say one more about this subject, it was during the Depression, she said, all my clientele will leave me. They'll get their orders not to go to me anymore, and I'll starve to death. She says, I don't know what I'm going to do. And the last we heard, the time that she was still going to the Catholic Church, although she was fully convinced she shouldn't.
Well, I was told this very well one time,
I don't believe in them. Candles, votive offerings, the ring in marriage, holy water, processions are all of pagan origin.
Does the Bleeding Heart have any place in our church?
I don't think it should have much of a place in our church. Anything that's in the Bible we can use with discretion.
No, but the heart is cut out.
The Bleeding Heart.
You see so much in Mexico.
I don't know. After all, is Christ, always picture Christ on the cross. Is Christ still on the cross? No, he's a living Savior now. And I think we shouldn't be continuing to worship a dead Savior. I think the symbolism of Christ on the cross is something we should understand, but I don't think we ought to start kissing the image of the sacrifice, nor revering it, or bowing down to it, or kneeling before it, or carrying it around our necks as a symbol of our worship.
How about the where the heart is cut out?
I don't know. Where the heart is cut out and is bleeding, lying there. I don't know, but I know the Sacred Heart was sacred throughout all paganism to the sun god. Yes. Of course, in Mexico, the Aztec Indians sacrifice thousands upon over 50,000 human sacrifices a year, sacrificed to the sun god. They took them up on the high altars, pulled them down over a stone with a priest hanging onto the hand or the feet, and then took a obsidian knife and slit their chest open and tore out the still palpitating heart and held it up as an offering to the sun god, and walked over and anointed the lips of the image of the sun god nearby as one of their sacrifices. They also frequently threw the victim in fire and burned him, and the priest stood there with flesh hooks watching him there in the coals of fire until he had almost stopped to read the chants. They chanted much louder. Drummers beat much louder during this to drown out the screams of the victim in the fire. And then just before he died, they grabbed him out with their flesh hooks while he was in a semi-conscious condition, but he was still writhing, slit his chest open, and the steaming heart was torn out and held up as an offering to the sun god. The ancient Egyptians did exactly the same thing. And in Babylon, the heart was sacred. The sacred heart, the sacred heart, the sacred heart. That's a very common thing in the Catholic Church, too. Well, they offered them to the idols of Canaan. Psalm 106, when the children of Israel departed from God and offered their children, they offered them to devils. Yea, they offered them to devils when they offered them to the idols of Canaan. Psalm 106. It was devil worship. All paganism is devil worship. He has always required your most dearest and most cherished possession. Now, you see, if you're worshiping a devil and you want to placate him and appease him, you withhold nothing. Your dearest possession, you give to him. You give to your God. The thing that you cherish the most, you hold nothing back. You give to the evil one, showing him that he has everything, that you hold nothing back from him. You're his subject. These poor Yazidis over here that are so superstitious and all of that, rest of that, do you know that they have some very strange things? Oh, you've read about the high places in the Bible? They have it as a part of their religion to go up every morning and kiss the place where the sun first touches when it rises. They're supposed to do it in the evening, too, where it last touches at night. That's a daily act of worship, to go up and kiss that high spot where the sun first touches. That's a sacred spot. They have it in, they carry the crozier. They worship saints. They keep Sunday. They have holy water. They have a priest king whom they claim is infallible in matters of religion. Every time they pass the Catholic Church, these Yazidis, these open devil worshippers, go in and give obeisance to the images. They say that it's a part of our religion to go in and give obeisance to the images in any church, even though it may be a Christian church. The images must receive our veneration. So that's a part of their religion. They go on long pilgrimages. They have penance. They have everything that the church has, lock, stock, and barrel almost, just as it is found in the church. They have their holy water, their relics of the saints, they have saints, they have all these things in the Yazidi religion. Blood atonement and Mormonism, no, I haven't studied. Yeah. Slit your throat from ear to ear if you ever betray the secrets of Masonry. You would take that oath that they can do that, that they should do that, if you ever betray their secrets. Oh, Glories of Mary by St. Liguori. Glories of Mary. Glories of Mary. And Liguori is L-I-G-U-O-R-I, I believe it is. St. Liguori. Mm-hmm. But get the big edition. I advertised for it very widely before I found it. I finally got two editions, an English edition and an American edition, and since it was such an important book, I kept both editions, both the one printed in England with the approval of the church over there and the one printed over here. Yes, it is. It's filled with interest. This question here that we have is the book of Stone Speaks, possibly by Smith or two or three other men who read it. I didn't recognize that name of the book, about the pyramids of Egypt and the measurements of the various rooms and everything foretelling the future. It is nothing but an interpretation from pure imagination. I think you'll find out if you go into it. The devil does not know the future. The devil knows his plans for the future, but he doesn't know God's plans for the future. And those Egyptian pyramids were built by open devil worshippers. I don't think that any one of them had any knowledge of the future. I don't think the devil knew that Christ was coming, but he didn't know what was going to happen in 1492, I don't think. The devil only knows what he can control about the future, and he can certainly do some pretty good shrewd guessing sometimes. But I don't think for one moment that the Great Pyramids of Egypt foretell the entire history of the world and exactly when. I studied the book. I studied it at length. I talked with scholars who, with men, I don't call them scholars, who are all wrapped up in the pyramids of Egypt as foretelling the future. And I have studied their works in considerable detail. And as all I can get out of any of them in studying them most carefully is a big headache.
Well, this man, he took out the 2300 years in water.
Mm-hmm.
And then the slip came in the door on the 7 years. Meetings, and he went over the meetings. Well, and he heard the crew, our crew, and he became a subject.
Mm-hmm. As a result of reading the book partially?
Yeah.
Yes, well. I don't think. Well, let me tell you that personally, my personal opinion is that there's nothing to the whole theory. Now, it might be that this man who read the book and then read the one of our books on the 2300 days, that God may have used something in the other book for impressing him and may have brought him out from it. But as far as being true, after all, a book like that would be just like the Bible in foretelling the future. And I don't believe that in the pyramids of Egypt or anything that even compared to the Holy Scriptures in foretelling the future. So that's my personal opinion. I've lived long enough to know that I don't know everything and that there are multitudes of people that know a lot more than I do. And by the way, do any of you think we are very smart down here in these last days? What would you think if I told you that you weren't even half-wits, the whole business of you here? You're not. And I mean exactly that. There's not one person in this group here today that's even a half-wit by God's standards. Adam was more than twice as tall as men now living. You believe that, according to the spirit of prophecy? All right, his head was more than twice as tall. He was built in proportion, so his head was more than twice as wide. He was still built in proportion, so it was also twice as thick this way. His brain capacity was more than eight times the brain capacity that we have. Our brains are not one-eighth as big as Adam's brain. Do you think Adam's brain was more active or less active than ours? It says he had more than 20 times the vital life force, and his brain definitely was more than eight times as big as our brain. Now, I should have said that we're not even eighths with, because I don't think our little shriveled-up brains, and you just look at what the human race has, some of our most educated men, just see some of the smart tricks that they pull off and how they control themselves sometimes, and I tell you, we're living down on the last end of the world's history when we're all just going around about seeing through a glass darkly, and there are none of us that have any right to feel that we know very much. But there are a lot of others that know a lot that I don't know, brother, and they might be something there that I don't know, but nothing that I've seen seemed to have any kernels of wheat. Is all I could find is bushels of chaff, and I dug and dug and dug, and I couldn't find any kernels of wheat at all, so I quit digging.
You've no doubt read the book, The Two Babylons by Alexander.
I succeeded in reading a part of it and glancing through part. I never succeeded in reading it clear through. Hyslop was very strongly twisted in favor of that Nimrod was everything. Actually, all ancient pagan kings claimed the same to be God, just like Nimrod did. And so he makes everything that followed Nimrod point back to Nimrod, and I can't see it because all the other kings that followed Nimrod had the same claim. So I don't think that I think he distorted things. By the way, Hyslop was, I believe, a Presbyterian minister. He was a minister of one of the other denominations, wrote that book. He did a phenomenal piece of research, but he unfortunately made enough mistakes so that if you were to go to a scholarly institution today and start quoting Hyslop's Two Babylons, including our own seminary in Washington, D.C., they would probably laugh you right out of the building. That doesn't mean that all the things that he said were wrong. He made just enough mistakes so that they don't accept him as a whole. Therefore, they just tend to throw him away completely, but that should not be done because he did a phenomenal and colossal piece of research there. Alexander Hyslop was a real scholar, but I think he had colored glasses on and sometimes twisted things a little bit to fit his theory, and I don't think it should be quite done. Yes. I was amazed to discover in my study that, for instance, there was an only begotten son being worshipped before the time of Christ. And he was called the Branch, that identical title. And he was called the Savior. And he was called a lot of other titles. And the question comes up now, what about these people that claim that the law of God is all picked up from this pagan literature, for instance, before the time of Moses? On that problem, that's fairly easy to handle for Seventh-day Adventists. On this other problem, I have an answer for that, too. On the problem of the law being back there before the time of Christ, may I ask you this? When was the law first given to man? In the Garden of Eden. It was... I'd show that the children of Israel, when they started to come out of Egypt, started keeping the Ten Commandments, and I'd show that the Sabbath commandment was least back there given at the Garden of Eden, and that I can show you from a Catholic book, if I met a Catholic, I can show you from a Catholic book that God first gave his law to man in the Garden of Eden, all 10 principles of the law. He implanted it into man's heart at that time, but at Mount Sinai, there was a second publication of the law. I have a Catholic book that says that. A good one. It says the same book says that we're going to be judged by that law, and that we better keep it if we expect to get to heaven, or we're going to go into eternal hell fire if we don't. All 10 commandments. Pretty strong book. Now, on the second thing now, of these things that came in, the branch, the worship of the cross, all of these things that were used before the time of Christ, may I ask you this? Did Satan know that Christ was coming to this world as our Savior? Did he know what he was planning on doing with him when he came? Did he know more about the plan of salvation than probably anybody in the Old Testament times? I think he did. He had several thousand years to study it, and he had a much better brain than probably most human beings have. So I think he knew all about it. And his counterfeits were set up in many cases before the genuine come. Let me ask you this. When we started to build our atom bomb to take over to Japan, supposing that the Russians, or the Japanese, we'll say, had stolen our plans for the atom bomb, or got a hold of them some way, and succeeded by rush techniques of some kind in building an atom bomb before we did. Now, they had our plans. When we came out with our atom bomb, would our atom bomb be a copy of theirs? No. They simply were using our plans. I think Satan, knowing all about the plan of salvation, put a lot of counterfeits in before the time of Christ, and that the fact that some of these pagans had the essential elements of the Ten Commandment law, that God planted that Ten Commandments in man's heart in the Garden of Eden because there was no sin to begin with, and there's without law, there's no sin, and it says they sinned. And when Cain killed his brother Abel, he knew he was sinning, and he knew he was breaking one of God's principles. Whether they were given in just so many words or not like they were on Mount Sinai, I don't know, but the principles were there. Well, as I walked by, I saw the inscription to the unknown God, thank you. And him I come to declare unto you. Now, Catholics, sincere Catholics, slam the door in your face and will refuse to accept your literature, and yet if you can break down their prejudice, you may finally win them. Now, at the times of their ignorance, God winked at. I think that that's what it means. If a man is wants to learn the truth and he's ignorant, now at the time of Paul's ignorance, God certainly winked at, because when Paul was out killing Christians, he was doing it with a clear conscience, and God didn't charge him with sin. He was killing Christians and thought he was doing right. And God winked at his ignorance, or shut his eyes to it, but he now calls all men to repentance. And I think that that's the ignorance that God winks at. That who had the power of Christians? That the church, Catholic Church? No, I don't know anything about that. They would claim it's because they had the power to do that. Of course, when the priest says, "I absolve thee," the priest is Jesus Christ. He doesn't represent Jesus Christ. He is Jesus Christ. And when the priest speaks certain words over that wafer, and that becomes the actual body and the blood of Jesus Christ, when he speaks those words, he is creating God. God has given man the power to create God, and he is creating God when he does that according to their teaching. if you'll read the paper that you got this afternoon on those three nails, I don't know whether or not there were three nails used. Now, it says, as a historian, it says that Constantine took some of the nails of the cross and made rays over an image with them. Some of the nails of the cross. It seems that those three, I have many pictures of pagan gods with three nails sticking right over the top of their head, and they're sometimes sticking up away from the top of the head a little bit. I think that since the word wow means nail, I think that the word nail also meant wow, and wow is one of the symbols for the number six. Otherwise, I can't explain the use of those three nails with the tail and mouth serpent, because that's where we always so frequently find, at least, the number 666 is that tail and mouth serpent with the sun behind it, and you'll find the three nails there. Sprinkling? Well, the holy water, I can tell you where holy water came from. You know, this heavenly bull god that fertilizes the earth. The Babylonian texts say, holy water thou shalt take, and the ancient names for this holy water referred to it frankly and openly as the generative element. That's where the origin of our holy water is. It has nothing whatsoever to do with Christianity. It's purely a pagan use of the holy water. All pagan peoples about have had holy water. Any other questions? Yes. Books on symbolism, also books on the Egyptian religion, where Budge's Amulets and Superstitions might have some of that material in it, but it's called the Benben Stone in the Egyptian language, and the Benben is the name of the phallus in the Egyptian religion. And there are many other books. I suppose I could give you, if I get to my notes here, I could give you several dozen books that you could go to for research on that subject. Yes, Symbol, Sex, and the Stars by Busenbark is a very scholarly work, and it's also as clean a work as, I mean, there's a whole room in the Library of Congress that's so filled with filth in dealing with this subject that I was ashamed to be caught in there, but I did go in there to look at one or two books that I'd found so many references to. But Busenbark's Symbol, Sex, and the Stars is a very scholarly work and a clean-minded man who wrote it. And his work would not be objectionable for anyone to study. And I don't know whether he brings out the church steeple or not, but you'd go into almost any book on the history of the church steeple, and you'd find that that was the meaning of it. In fact, it's called the Belfry, and they claim that the word bell as used there is represents this, I mean, is the same root as the old Babylonian bell. It's not B-E-L-L, but the word belfry means bell fire. F-R-Y is the old word for fire, the bell fire, and again, having the idea of fire and generation and all those things is connected with generation, the fiery disposition, and so forth. That's the meaning of the word belfry, according to a number of scholars that I've read. Not a bell tower, as we normally think of it. My opinion has been all the way through that it should not come out with a denominational label to it. I took it to an outside publisher, Dr. Graham Maxwell, that believes that it should come out. I was very interested in getting his reaction because he's a real scholar. I'm just a layman, and I studied quite a bit, but I still feel a little bit humble about my accomplishments sometimes, and I like to get the opinion of some of our real scholars. And he said the book should come out in exactly the same form as it is now. He said it's an encyclopedia of information on the subject. Then you should write several popular books for the popular public to read. That was his statement to me. Yes, by an outside publisher, just an outside publishing firm. There is a great deal of interest in by many, many people today on mystic numbers, and no scholarly work has ever been written on this subject. No scholarly work has ever been written on the subject of 666. You'd be astonished at the amount of drivel that you find when you try to go into the literature. They have taxed the name number 666 on every hated man in history. It was tacked on Stalin. It was tacked on Hitler. It was tacked on Nero Caesar. By the way, the word Nero Caesar comes out to 666. And I don't believe it has any significance. I don't think it did. But a large number of pagan gods had the number 666, and they were deliberately spelled. The word Abraxas, which is the Gnostic god Abraxas, Webster's Unabridged will tell you under Abraxas that this name was chosen. The letters were so chosen that it would add up to 365, which was the cycle of the sun god as the ruler of the circle of the heavens. And so the Abraxas was deliberately chosen, and they chose a large number of other gods with names, and I have that on the last page of our study here, that add up to 666. The Latin numerical system, incidentally, adds up to 666. The Latin numerical system, I, 1, V, 5, X, 10, L, 50, C, 100, D, 500, and there is no... There's no M1000 in the original Latin. During the medieval period, up to comparatively late times, M was indicated by this kind of a symbol, which was two D's back to back. They wanted to write 1500, they wrote it like this. If they wanted to write 2000, they wrote it like that. They just increased the number of D's. This represents D's here, back to back, and they wrote the letter D usually. Why they did it like that was an I and a C, and they put another C on this side here to represent 1,000, and that's the way they wrote 1,000 up until some comparatively modern times. But the Latin numerical system is actually, and the word Latinos, from which the Latins claim that Latinos was a sun god, L-A-T-E-I-N-O-S, that name adds up to 666. They deliberately spell names like that. During the time of Pompeii, which was destroyed at the time shortly after Christ, the numerical value of people's names is a very significant thing in people's thinking. And the lovers wrote notes on the walls of Pompeii in which one of them said, I love her whose number is 545. And they concealed the person's number. They knew the particular girl, but so I suppose all the other boys and girls in the neighborhood figured up all the names. They apparently knew all their names anyway, but we find a number of inscriptions in Pompeii, after they excavated the city, about I love her whose number is such and so, and I thought upon my lady Harmonia for good, and her number is such and so. But it's no different than the ancient Babylonian kings, because one ancient Babylonian king laid out the walls of a famous city according to the number of his name, and he laid out a league for each letter, each numerical value of his name, and that was quite a common thing. They were very strong on numerology in that day. I have multitudes of verses quoted in there. I have tried to make it so it will be accepted by the scholars of the world, and I let the chips fall where they will. I've tried to be very careful to use only authorized publications of the secret societies and of the church and scholars of the world. I take up each of the sacred numbers that were used in paganism and why the number was sacred. And in order to get into the why, you've got to show how that god was worshipped and pictures of the god being worshipped and so forth. And when you get through, I think it's... I don't think anyone could that was sincere could possibly continue in one of these pagan religions after reading the book. I don't see how he could. But I don't deal a great deal with Bible prophecy. I greatly suspect they would. I hope so. I don't have quite all my eggs in one basket. I have four copies of my manuscript in four different places. But one thing that I don't have my films in four different places. And I should have my films copied. I should have some of them taken over again. I hope the time comes before long where I will no longer be held down by finances and I can put my full time to this. This is my daily wish, that I could put my full time to recopying the poor pictures that I took in the early days when I had neither the experience, the equipment, nor the proper film to do the work with. My copy wants to become first class. One famous scholar, Brown, in this believing world, says this: it is not correct for us to refer to those religions of Babylon, Egypt, and the rest as dead religions. Actually, they're not dead at all, for the echo of their ancient thunder is still to be heard reverberating in almost every form of faith existing today. This paganism is with us today, and it is heard, the echo of its ancient thunder is heard reverberating in the religions that endured. Another scholar says, the religions that endured took up. One man says that all the threads of man's ancient religion were picked up by the religion that endured, and he's talking about Catholicism, although he doesn't name it, but it's quite clear that all the threads of this ancient paganism were picked up and woven into the new fabric, and not one single thread was lost. That's his statement. I'm glad to be connected with a church that doesn't go in for these pagan things, and if some of these things slip in, sometimes I'm not too worried about it because I know they slip in through ignorance. I don't like to see them either. I don't like to see them either. Murray Walsh is a real scholar. And the common pictures, for instance, our SAVE pictures, you know, in our that picture machine that we give our Bible studies with, the SAVE program, every time Christ is pictured in there almost, he's showing the blessing hand every time he's pictured in there. And I don't like it because we don't have any historical proof that that was ever used, yet we have ancient Greek gods shown seated in this blessing hand before the time of Christ. And over in India, the destroyer is shown with that symbol, and it's the symbol of the trident sign. You see, the program of Satan is to get everybody so accustomed to these symbols and these things that they won't be shocked when they see them, and so gradually get them used to it. So when they come into the Catholic Church, oh yes, I've seen that many times before. They're not mystified by it, and so they can be taken right in. Crowns are made frequently. Crowns don't last any length of time at all. Each pope has his own crown. He may take some of the jewels and one thing and another preceding crown. They're not all crowned with the same crown at all. The fisherman's ring is always broken at the death of the preceding pope, and a new one is made for the new pope coming in. Crown is also frequently altered, and what they used to have on the crowns is not what they necessarily have now. So we can't prove that the title Vicaris Filii Dei was ever on the papal crown, although there's some strong proof that it was. But we do know this, that the man who went over to Rome and came back and told Uriah Smith that 666 was on the papal crown, we published it in our early volumes of Daniel Revelation. You don't find it in there now. Do you know why? Because the Catholic Church told us in Washington, D.C., if you publish that book once more with the 666 is on the papal crown, we're going to sue you because you don't have any proof for it. So we took it out of the book. We didn't have any proof for it. And I think the man that went to Rome and said 666 is on the papal crown, I think he was just a scholar that knew enough about the numerical systems then in use. You see, these numerical systems we've never known anything about. The only other American numerical system we ever studied, except our own, was which one? I, V, X, so forth, L, and that's all we've ever studied. We never studied any of these. And the church has been using the Babylonian or the Greek system all the way through and has been using this number. These coats of arms here, I didn't get to go in with them because the time just escaped me. I was only talking about 10 or 15 minutes, and that clock said it was almost 5 o'clock. But those coats of arms are filled with the number 666. I can show it to you on there in many places. I don't have one single copy left, but I'm going to send some up. If I'd known this as it was, I had to pay extra to get my suitcase up here with those papers. I'm not going to send them up by air, but I will send them up by partial post to the pastor elder down here. Copies of this, I got them down there all printed. I just ran off 500 copies of each one of them the other day. That's 20, about 30 pages of that study that I gave you today, and I printed 500 of them. And I assembled... working at nights, I assembled about 250, I believe, just before I came up here, but they didn't last any length of time at all. I'll send them up then.